They won that one with a final score of 11-6. So great job there.
Is college even necessary to get into the NBA at this point?
Got to focus on the game. This is not an easy win.
He's the most hyped up prospect since LeBron James.
This is the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
We welcome you here to the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to inform you and entertain you about all things sports. But I'm Dawson Perrell.
And I'm Ryan Davis.
So Ryan, what do we got on the schedule for this week?
So starting off, we'll have Zion and Lucas doing the March Madness outcome, talking about the championship and stuff like that. Then after, it'll be Aiden and Michael doing the WNBA draft, having some thoughts about that. And then you, Dawson, and Braden will do the NFL draft, some predictions for that. And then Aiden and Eli will do the NBA playoffs first round, starting some second, some game twos already have been played. And then, that's it.
But with that, we will move on to the next segment where Zion and Lucas will talk about March Madness and its outcomes. You're listening to the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook, 91.7 WEEM.
We welcome you here to today's first segment of Inside the Playbook. I am Zion Palmieri, joined alongside
Lucas Williams.
And today we are going to be talking about March Madness, you know, both men's and women's, and all the fun things that happened, you know, over it just finished about a little less than a week ago. So all our takeaways and drawbacks. So let's start things off. Purdue versus UConn, the men's final. UConn won 75-60, so they are back-to-back champions.
Yeah, as you said, back-to-back champions, and even better, Purdue is not the champion. I really have a strong dislike for Purdue.
I know a lot of people that do.
Yeah, it's really a toss-up. Either you love them or you hate them, and especially in the state of Indiana. I mean, I'm just following that hate side.
The day after like it ended, it was like the school was split in two. Like you could see everyone was either like real down and depressed or like they were like on top of the world. Because it's a big rivalry. It's one of the biggest, I think, right?
I mean, yeah, Indiana versus Purdue. I mean, that's got to be one of the top in Indiana, at least.
They're big schools. But looking more closely, Zach Edey, he had 37 points that night. He went 15 for 25 field goal, and he had 10 rebounds. You wrote he's also a bum and won't be anything in the NBA. So while he did kind of perform that night, they ultimately fell. What was your take on that game specifically from Zach Edey?
Well, Edey did have 37 points, but I mean, he's also 7-4.
Yeah.
The reason why I said he won't be anything in the NBA is he's 7-4, but he doesn't have, you know, the fundamentals like other big men. Like look at Victor Wembanyama, right? He's 7-4.
Also 7-4. Yep.
And he moves like a point guard almost. I mean, he's pretty shifty compared to Edey, where he just kind of drives in and just...
Wembanyama can also shoot threes.
Yeah, something that Edey can't do.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend about this last night, trying to get prepared for this segment and make sure, because I don't personally like... I'll watch college. I love any sport when it's in like playoffs or March Madness or anything, but I don't know a lot too much about Edey. And he's just like, he has the potential. If he worked on like 10 other things, like when he started, he could be this great player, but he just didn't.
Yeah. I mean, also, if you look back at Edey's history, he hasn't only played basketball, mm-hmm. he also played baseball and hockey. And I mean, a 7-foot-4 baseball or hockey player.
I've seen videos and photos of him playing both, and it's crazy.
Yeah, that would be a unit, especially a goalkeeper.
He looks so out of place. Yeah, just like...
Yeah, he doesn't have to move. He can just sit there.
Yeah.
No one can score.
Yeah, but I mean, looking more to why he, like, you personally think he won't be anything in the NBA, I mean, I don't have a great opinion because I don't know a lot, but especially regarding that. But looking at players like in the NBA, like, He's going to back down someone in college. He's not backing down Joel Embiid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, once he gets to the NBA, where there's a lot more fierce competition and these guys are all professionals. Because, I mean, think about college. How many of them are actually going to the NBA and are actually going to become something?
Not a lot.
When you have, and then you go to the NBA and everyone's, I mean, extremely good.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not going to, I don't think he's going to compare. Unless he does work on 10 other things, as you said.
He is young, so you give him that. He's got a lot of time to figure things out. Where do you personally think? Do you think he's going to get drafted? Do you think he's going to be a low pick? Is he just ultimately, end of his career, is he just going to be a mid-bench player? Where is he going to be?
I don't think he's going to be just a bench player, because at the end of the day, he's 7-4, but I think he's probably going to go first round.
Yeah. Because
it is that. Mm-hmm. I mean, player of the year.
He's the face. I mean, alongside Caitlin Clark, he's the face of college basketball.
Yeah, and I mean, exactly. He's the face of Purdue. When you think of Purdue, you think of Zach Edey.
So, I mean, looking closer at that game, UConn, they had very spread out points. Four of their starters had 10-plus points. That's how you win a basketball game, and you can see that. They're a very well-coached team. When you go back-to-back in March Madness, like, that you're elite, literally. You're literally elite. I don't know another way to put that.
Yeah, and also, talking about the spread out points, I mean, look at Edey. He had 37.
Yeah.
I mean, no one else on the team compared to 37.
If they wanted to win, he needed some help. You put there, Purdue shot 1 through 7 for threes. One and seven, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't really shoot many threes, and they do have some pretty good shooters on there. They just didn't shoot.
They just didn't have a great night.
Yeah, they just didn't. Yeah. They didn't show up.
They look better in every single stat. Again, that's just how you win a basketball game. And I guess Purdue came in there, not that I'm sure they wanted to win, but they didn't perform like it. You can't dominate with one player. One player can dominate. You can't dominate with one player. That put that in a quote book.
Oh yeah,
I just cooked right there.
Yeah, but I mean, Zach Edey, he was just a one man squad out there.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to UConn, they were all just playing together like a team, and I mean that just decided the game.
What's the future for Purdue now?
I don't know. I hope they suck. I'm going to be completely honest.
Where's IU at in comparison to all this?
IU just signed someone.
There
number one in the transfer portal.
There
center.
You go. There
so,
you go. So
yeah, hopefully we'll at least make it.
You got the new Zach Edey.
I don't know about that. I mean, hopefully better.
Yeah. So we'll transition here, going to Iowa versus South Carolina, the women's final of March Madness. South Carolina won 87-75 in that game. Caitlin Clark had 30 points. So playing like Zach Edey, you know, just dominating. Here's my quote yet again. You can't dominate with just one player. Again, also another, it was like the same thing happened twice. So you have 38-0 South Carolina versus the best player of the sport.
Yeah. Caitlin Clark, she did have 30 points, but she shot 15 for 41 field goal. And I mean, she just wasn't on. Well,
how
I want to say she's on her
41.
A game.
That is crazy.
I mean, she did have 30 points.
Yeah.
But compared to what she could have had,
you better
she
have
30 70.
Points when you shoot 41.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. You just can't have a one man team. And I mean, they had 29 rebounds. Iowa had 29 rebounds. You just can't do that. You put Tessa Johnson coming off the bench for South Carolina, had 19. And that's another great ran program. And when you go 38-0, like that, put that into history books. That's crazy.
Yeah, as much as I wanted Iowa to win, because I like Caitlin Clark, I mean, she's amazing at what she does. Seeing a 38-0 South Carolina win the entire thing, I mean, just seeing any undefeated team go all the way, never lose a single game, I mean, that's just something special.
Yeah, they really earned it. Like, you can't take that away from it at all. You didn't lose a game. That's insane. In that game, they had 51 rebounds, doubling Iowa's rebounds. And like just like the other, they were kind of like the same game pretty much. You just absolutely steamrolling them every stat other than Caitlin Clark and Zach Edey, who put up the main points and stuff. So you just can't win a basketball game like that. That's the theme.
Yeah, it's really kind of weird to see how both of these games kind of played out the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a lot of people that wanted Purdue to win and they ended up not winning. A lot of people wanted Iowa to win. They ended up not winning. You had the two-star players. I mean, they dropped both 30, but they just both got outplayed by, I mean, a team.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a 1v4 or 5, you know.
Yeah.
It's rough. Looking at the future, though, of course, for the WNBA, Caitlin Clark did just get drafted, but looking at college for women's, she was the face of college. She's probably going to be the face of college, even though she's not in college anymore. She did great things for college, and so did Zach Edey, but that's two of the biggest names gone.
Yeah, that's going to be, I mean, very interesting to see next year when you have two elite players like that who are just not going to be there anymore.
Yeah, it'll definitely shift a lot of things. Now, I mean, Iowa's going to look at it as a great basketball program. This is the most coverage I've ever seen on one, like, woman in a sport. And especially for Zach Edey, he's declared for the draft. Caitlin Clark got drafted the other night. Let's talk about that. Caitlin Clark drafted number one overall to the Indiana Fever. Kind of a unanimous. Everyone knew she was going to, no, excuse me. Everyone knew she was going number one overall. Great pick. Those games are going to be, I don't want to say sold out because I don't know the exact numbers, but like they're going to be packed next year.
Yeah, this is going to be just a great thing for the WNBA. When you have someone like Caitlin Clark, I mean, literally the female version of Steph Curry, it's going to do great things. And especially, I mean, drafting the Indiana Fever.
Yeah.
Indiana, number one.
That will be a fun thing to watch because, I mean, they're here. They play where the Pacers play. They say, like, basketball is grown in Indiana or something like that. So that's the perfect place. I saw they had two back-to-back number one overall picks. So not a very good Fever team, and hopefully it will be in the coming years.
That will do it for me and Lucas's segment here today. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, there will be more segments to come on ASN Inside the Playbook.
This presentation of the Arabian Sports Network is underwritten by Regenerative Health and Wellness, LLC, located at 526 North Pendleton Avenue in Pendleton. Dr. Foley and the staff of Regenerative Health and Wellness offer services in the area of weight loss, hormone balance, autoimmune issues, and more. Information about Regenerative Health and Wellness is available at 317-903-1791. Regenerative Health and Wellness, LLC.
Back to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
So you just heard our first segment here in the Arabian Sports Network, Inside the Playbook. We're your hosts, Dawson and Ryan. Hope you're all enjoying the episode so far. Of course, Zion and Lucas just talked about March Madness. And a quick fun fact here for you, Ryan. This year for women's college basketball March Madness, the Final Four had 13.8 million viewership count. And that was the most they've had all time. It was pretty close to the men's. I think the men's was at like 14 million. Yeah. Women's at 13. I don't think it's ever been anywhere near that close. Pretty crazy.
I think some of the credit has to go to Caitlin Clark.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's been like in the spotlight the entire March Madness and throughout the year. And then also South Carolina going undefeated the entire year. I think that was also a big one because, I mean, I don't know. It was just very competitive this year, and I think that's what brought all that viewership.
Yeah, and that was a good leeway to our next segment. Aiden and Michael will be talking about the WNBA draft, of course, which will include Caitlin Clark. So that'll be up next on the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook.
Welcome to this segment of Inside the Playbook here on the Arabian Sports Network from 91.7 WEEM. For this segment, it is Aiden Wilson and me, Michael Hooker. We are talking about the WNBA draft because that just happened not that long ago. And some big stories. I mean, should we just get right into it? I mean,
yeah, Michael, just go for it.
Just go for it. All right. So, number one overall pick, the home team, the hometown team, the Indiana Fever pick, Caitlin Clark, point guard out of Iowa. Caitlin Clark, one of the most, if not the most popular WNBA players to ever come out of college.
I don't know if it's because, like, most of the attention now or. There's more attention towards the WNBA and like women's college and stuff, but I would say Caitlin Clark's probably the most popular woman athlete, especially when it comes to like basketball, at least more recently.
Oh yeah, and I mean like her clips, her highlights get so many different views. I see so many edits on TikTok about her, different podcasts talking about her. So she is definitely one of the most popular college athletes in general. Out there right now. But then number two, you have Cameron Brink, power forward out of Stanford. Very, very solid player. I've seen some of her clips. Very tall, not afraid to shoot three. Very good in the post. She's a very, very solid player. And I think that she fits right in with the LA Sparks, what they're trying to build over there.
Yeah, I would say so as well, Michael. She went to Stanford for college. I don't believe they made it pretty far in the tournament. Obviously, Caitlin Clark kind of took the tournament over for the women's side of things. But Cameron Brink, as you were saying, she's tall. She plays that forward kind of center position. You know, she can really do it on both ends, and I think that's something, you know, that LA should be thankful that she can bring toward the team.
Yeah, and then at pick three, they get the Chicago Sky. Get a national champion, Camilla Cardoso from South Carolina. South Carolina undefeated, perfect season, topping it off with the national championship. So props to them. But Camilla Cardoso, she is a beast down there in the paint. Very tall, athletic, knows how to use her size to her advantage, and could see the court very well. She makes great passes and makes plays for others. So she was a big reason why South Carolina was able to have the success they had this year.
Yeah, and she's gritty as well, Michael. And as you were saying, she went to South Carolina. I believe she played, what was it, 3 or 4 years there? So she's definitely got the experience. That coach as well as South Carolina definitely pulls the team together in a very close-knit kind of system. They're all, as I said, they're all kind of hustle players. They're gritty. And I think for Camilla to bring that to Chicago, as well as the later overall pick that the Sky had as well, I think, you know, we'll get to that. But I think that duo there in Chicago, both with their tendencies, their hustle, their awareness, and they're really just, you know, their passion towards the game and the sport, I think that's going to be something to really watch there down in Chicago.
Yeah, and then at pick number 4, it's the LA Sparks again. They got that via a trade. Mm-hmm. They picked Rekia Jackson out of Tennessee, the small forward. Yeah. She had a very, very solid season again for her. And going into this draft, she wasn't really projected to go too high, like a mm-hmm. 1 or 2 pick. But 4, very solid spot there in the WNBA draft. Only at 12 picks in the first round, and she was able to get the number 4. Selection.
Yeah, Michael, and the guard, as you were saying, out of Tennessee, she averaged 17.8 points and she shot 47.9 from the field as well. So from what it seems like, you know, she's a volume shooter and she shoots well. And I think that the team, obviously, that she got drafted to the Sparks, I think, you know, she's going to provide a lot of offense there. And you know, that's just more aggression and really passion down there in L.A. again.
Well, yeah, and once again, the Sparks getting a great young duo in Brink and Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I think that really brings a different element to their team. They have a power forward that can spread the floor, and they get a small forward as well that can run the 2 guard that can also spread the floor and give Cammer Brink the touches down low that she needs.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely a great duo. But then at pick 5, we have J.C. Sheldon out of Ohio State, the shooting guard. While only 5'10", is definitely a very, very solid player at that 2-guard position.
Yeah, Michael, she went to Ohio State. Ohio State for, I mean, just college basketball in general, I'd say Ohio State's pretty good. You know, they're definitely a team that kind of, I wouldn't say sticks out, but they're a team that is consistent at least every year. And for J.C. Sheldon, as you were saying, she's 5'10", but she's really aggressive. You know, kind of in those shorter players, as you see for really any sport, they kind of carry the aggression and the hustle as a part of really their skill set. And you would say that sticks out more than for them, at least for other players. So, yeah, it's a good thing. They got a short little, you know, energetic guard.
Yeah, and Dallas was able to trade with Chicago for that 5th overall pick to pick up Sheldon. But then at number 6 for D.C., it's Aaliyah Edwards, the power forward out of UConn. UConn, very, very good season. Fell short just by 1 game from the very, very big game. They lost that to Caitlin Clark in Iowa. But UConn's Aaliyah Edwards, 6'3", very, very good player.
Yeah.
I mean, she was one of the big reasons why UConn was very successful this year.
Yeah, and they went as far as they, you know, as you were saying, the reason they went as far as they did. For rebounds, you know, she was really up there in the averages. She averaged 7.3, almost 8 rebounds per game. And, she, you know, she stands 6'3" tall, 6'3", you know, I was saying. So for her and Aaliyah Edwards, very solid pick and a very solid player. Honestly, in my opinion, I see a lot of potential coming out of her, especially, you know, going to where she is and the pieces and the coaches and the culture that's around her that can build her into a better player.
Yeah, and then moving on to pick 7, it's the Chicago Sky once again. They traded for pick 7 from the Minnesota Lynx. They picked up, and this is an interesting pick, 6'3 power forward out of LSU, Angel Reese. Her and Cardoso,
yeah,
kind of some conflict there in college, but that's probably a lot of competitive nature. Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of these conflicts are, but Angel Reese, very, very solid player. We saw a lot at LSU. Yeah. She helped to bring them a national a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think Chicago getting a good duo down in the post, I think that was what they really wanted.
Yeah, Michael, as we were mentioning earlier, here teaming up with Camilo Cardoso, you were mentioning, obviously, they had some conflict there in college, but you also kind of mentioned that it's just kind of the competitive nature, especially there in the NCAA. I think Camilla and Angel Reese, they're both kind of similar. They play at similar play styles. They both have the aggression and attitude towards the game. And I think, you know, with both of them sharing the court together and sharing that attitude as well, I don't think anybody's really going to want to see them during the season. And I think it was Camilla herself. She said, you know, nobody's going to get rebounds over them too. So it's going to be exciting for Chicago for sure.
Yeah. And then at pick 8, we have Alyssa Philly from Utah, the 6'2 small forward.
Yep.
Went to Minnesota. That was the pick swap at the 7 and 8 position by the Lynx and the Sky. So really, the Lynx felt that they could get Philly at or Peely at the 8 position and swap with Chicago, and I think that's what they got. And they got a very solid 3 small forward that's 6'2" as well. So she could maybe even play the 4. Try to defend, you know, an Angel Reese who's 6'3", very similar in height there too.
Yeah. She was very solid this year, Michael. As you were saying, she played at Utah. She was named the Pac-12 Player of the Year. She led her conference in scoring and field goal percentage, so definitely a very solid player there. And Alyssa Peely, she's 6'2". You know, that's tall for the WNBA, and she's also aggressive as well. She makes up, a lot of rebounding and scoring down below with her size.
Yeah, and then moving on to pick number 9, it's Dallas once again, picking up another shooting guard. This time, it's Carla Leite from France.
Yeah.
5'9", averaged 18.4 points per game. Very, very solid player, apparently, over there in France. Kind of went under the radar, I guess, of some of these teams. Mm-hmm. And Dallas saw her, and they were like, well, let's just get a really good backcourt duo and Sheldon Leite and run with that.
Yeah, Michael. And for pick 10 as well, the Suns also picked, I believe it's the Suns. Let's actually. Hold on.
Yeah, I know it's Phoenix.
Yeah.
So
I think it's the Mercury.
It is the Mercury. It is the Mercury. 5'11", Layla Lakin from France as well. So two French players going.
Hold on,
back-to-back.
Redo that so it doesn't look like we actually don't know where we're
talking. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, Michael, and as you were mentioning, the Phoenix Mercury, they picked Layla Lakin out of France as well. So two back-to-back prospects coming from France. I guess you could say, you know, France really develops their basketball players. We've seen it with Victor Wembanyama, obviously a rookie coming into this NBA season, and now we see it with these two basketball players here for the WNBA as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you have two players going back-to-back from France, especially at the guard positions, at point guard and shooting guard, I think they really know how to develop their players at those guard positions. And you mentioned there Victor Wembanyama of the NBA. I mean, he's just a freak of nature. But moving on to pick 11, it's the New York Liberty. They picked up Markeisha Davis out of Ole Miss, this small forward, standing at about 6 foot. Very, very solid player for them. She's a good defender physically. Transferred to Ole Miss from Oxford. Loves to play in the post while being a three. So I think definitely with the Liberty, they wanted kind of a three who doesn't really play outside as much, but plays more on the inside, especially with that Sabrina Ionescu spreading the floor. I don't think they need the shooting that much.
Yeah, and Michael, as you were saying, she plays the forward. And with her, you know, she's 6 feet tall, but she's really a positionless defender. And that's what the Liberty really needed. They needed a solid defender, as I was saying, with the strength and the athleticism and the reach and, the quickness just to help them, back them up on the defensive end, as I was saying. So definitely a great pick there with Markeisha Davis.
Yeah. And then at pick 12, it was Atlanta. Girl from Australia, kind of a very difficult name to pronounce. I don't know if I want to attempt it. Do you want to attempt it?
We'll maybe come back to it.
Yeah, we'll come back to it. But she is a power forward out of Australia, standing at 6'1". She went up against some tall girls over there in Australia, so I don't think she's going to be too afraid to go up against a 6'4 Cameron Brink in the WNBA. But that rounds out the first round. But now, let's get into the interesting part. Mm-hmm. What teams in the WNBA do we think could have a very solid season after drafting like they did?
So just based off last season, the Las Vegas Aces, they did finish on top. They had 34 wins and only, 6 losses on the season. I don't think they drafted, I don't think they drafted super crazy. I don't think they actually had a pick in the first round at all. But the Liberty, I would say the Liberty are definitely going to be solid because, as you were saying earlier, Ionescu, and then they have the pick,
Markeisha Davis.
Yeah, Markeisha Davis, the defender from Ole Miss, as I was saying. I think really, if you're that good of a team, you have 32 wins and 8 losses. The only thing you could probably do better is defense. So I think with them picking up the defender in the draft, I think they have a shot to, do greater than they did last season.
Yeah. Now, one thing, hear me out on this. The Indiana Fever could be very, very tough. Because last year they picked 2 very, very solid players in the first round. They got, I believe, a top 4 pick and then another top 10 pick right behind that. And then this year, Caitlin Clark. You get someone who can shoot from half court and drain it to spread your floor and run your point. That's pretty solid.
I don't think
solid.
You can ask for more. Yeah.
Yeah. And then even the Sparks and the Sky getting the players that they did in the first round, getting a couple of bigs and a couple forwards for both teams. I mean, what more could you ask? You get your post players, you get your wing players, you set yourself up down low so that way you can work the outside more if you need to.
Yeah. Michael, as you were saying for the Indiana Fever last year, I believe they picked, Aaliyah Boston. And she's definitely been solid for the Fever. As you were saying, Caitlin Clark, arguably the best prospect to come into the WNBA at this point. And I think Caitlin Clark here in Indiana. Michael, I don't think we realize as fans or living in Indiana how crazy this really is. Caitlin Clark, she led her team, 3 years back-to-back to national championships?
2-3 years. She lost to LA, LSU and Angel Reese the year prior.
Yeah.
She lost to South Carolina this year. I don't know about 2 years or a few years ago.
Yeah.
I think it may have been her freshman year she was a junior or something like that. But I know she's a very, very good player, and that could bring a lot of publicity for not only the Indiana Fever, but the WNBA as a whole. People will want to watch their games because of Caitlin Clark, because she's such a highly touted player that they want to watch her play.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Obviously, Caitlin Clark, she broke records there in college. She led her team, obviously as far as she could take them. But Caitlin Clark here, or being in Indiana soon, I'm pretty sure. When does WNBA season start? Do you know?
I actually believe that they may have some games coming up soon. They start their season very soon.
Yeah. So I was saying, Caitlin Clark being here in Indiana, it's going to be exciting to watch me personally. I know my brother was talking about it because my brother keeps up with the women's side of college basketball a lot. And he was talking about, Caitlin Clark coming to Indiana. It's going to be like a crazy thing to see. Everybody's going to want to see it. So he was definitely, excited for Caitlin Clark to be here in Indiana.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm excited to see it, too. It brings more to the WNBA and to the Fever. And not to say it, but the Fever have kind of been overlooked by the Indiana Pacers these past few years. The Pacers this year, very, very solid. Mm-hmm. So this could definitely bring shine a lot of light for not only the FIBA but the WNBA.
Yeah.
But that is all of the time that we have here. Very good segment.
Yeah.
Very good topic to talk about. So that will do it for Aiden and I. We hope you enjoyed this segment of us talking about the WNBA draft. We're going to take a short break, but when we return, another segment of ASN Inside the Playbook.
WEEM is underwritten by Markleville Lumber Company, located on State Road 38, providing pallets, skids, and more with design, delivery, and inventory services. More information is available at MarklevilleLumber.com. Again, that is MarklevilleLumber.com, or by phone at 765-533-4311. Again, that is 765-533-4311. Markleville Lumber Company.
Back to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
So you just heard Aiden Michael talking about all things WNBA draft, but with that, we hit the midway point here on this week's episode of the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook. We already talked about Caitlin Clark. Of course, she's a big name in this past year. Yeah. WNBA draft came to Indiana to play for the Fever, and I'm pretty excited. Another fun fact here for you, Ryan. Caitlin Clark already has sold more jerseys than the entire Dallas Cowboys team combined over the span of the last season. That is pretty
crazy.
And I mean, no knock on the Dallas Cowboys. I just think it's crazy how many jerseys, because I'm pretty sure Caitlin Clark sold out of every single size jersey she ever had, like on the market.
That's crazy. And then if I'm correct, she had the most points in the NCAA history, boys and girls.
Yes, that's true. Crazy. She beat Pistol Pete Maravich, who had the record for the men's side of things. And she's going to do great things. I'm 100% here for it. Girls basketball. Let's go. Yeah. All right. Up next, myself and Braden Folk will be talking about the NBA draft here on the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook. Welcome back to the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM. I'm Dawson Perrell.
I'm Braden Falk.
And for this week's episode, we're going to be talking about the NFL draft. Of course, jumping right in here, the Bears have the first overall pick. And just recently, about a month ago, maybe just under that, they traded away Justin Fields to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a couple picks. I think it's pretty obvious who they're going with. I don't think it's much of a question. That's going to be Caleb Williams, quarterback out of USC. He's the best quarterback in the draft. Very, very good. His pro comp, at least in my eyes, is he's kind of a Kyler Murray size, maybe a bit taller, a bit bigger, with a great arm. I mean, I'm comparing him like an Aaron Rodgers type of arm. Very accurate, can throw it deep, very, very, very good all around. Not really a weakness to his arm, per se. Now, his big weakness is his size. He's 6'1". That's why, you know, that's the only question I can bring up with Caleb Williams. But for the Bears, I think there's no one else they go with. I'd say it's a 98% chance, maybe a 99% chance they go with Caleb Williams.
I think you've seen, you said his weakness is obviously below average height. Bryce Young, what is he, 5'10"?
Yeah.
He could be a good quarterback. He's got to get some weapons, I think. So I don't think the average height thing will be a too big of a deal for him. But other than that, I think he'll be the best player in the draft.
Yeah, you look at Caleb Williams a bit deeper here. He's 22 years old. He was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school. Started out with Oklahoma, transferred after 1 year to USC. He blew up at USC, a lot more success his first year with the Trojans. He won the Heisman in 2020. He had a phenomenal year. I think he was like a 42-5 in a touchdown interception ratio, one of the best we've seen in a long time. And then this past season, he was also pretty successful, not as good, but still pretty solid. Again, I don't think there's any other route the Bears go with here. I think there's other great quarterbacks, and I want to point out this draft class is very strong, especially offensively. This is probably one of the heaviest offensive and strongest offensive draft classes we've seen in the past like decade or so. Like the amount of so many talented quarterbacks, Marvin Harrison Jr., which we'll talk about here soon. He's probably the best wide receiver prospect we've seen in a long, long time. So I'm pretty excited, and I think Caleb Williams is a great way to get it started. He's great. And then moving forward to the second overall pick, it goes to the Washington Commanders. This is where it gets a little different. A lot of different opinions. On one side, you go with the LSU quarterback, Jaden Daniels. I think he's definitely the favorite to go at the number two spot, but not by much. Jaden Daniels, a quick guy, very, very athletic. His pro comp, more of a Jalen Hurts type of build. Dual threat, you know, he can move. Great, great scrambling quarterback, but he can throw the rock as well. And He's a big guy, 6'4", 244. That's obviously pretty good measurables for a quarterback. Again, very good accuracy, super speedy, as Braden, you put in our notes here.
What can I not say? Super speedy. He had, let me look at this, 3,600 total rushing yards in his 4 years, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, very good. You put on your weaknesses there, Braden. Doesn't anticipate, and go a little deeper on that.
Yeah, so like he has to wait for somebody to get open when I dive a little deep into his film, because, yeah, you know, got to watch film if you're going to do this, okay? So when he does it, he looks, he waits till the receiver is already open and doesn't anticipate that the receiver will get himself open or maybe get past the coverage or anything. He just throws it when they're already open. Most quarterbacks like Caleb Williams or Drake May coming up, they don't anticipate. They do anticipate.
Yeah, and Jaden Daniels coming off of a Heisman season. He won it this past year. It was a pretty close race between him and a couple other guys, but he came out as the best player in college football last season. And yeah, he's very good. I think his ceiling is just as high as Caleb Williams. He, again, very athletic. In fact, just because Caleb Williams has that size problem, I might put his ceiling above Caleb Williams. I think Caleb Williams has a better chance to be a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, but I think Jaden Daniels has the potential to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league just because of his natural talent and his measurables. But moving forward to a name you just mentioned, Braden, the UNC quarterback, Drake May. Again, I just mentioned a couple minutes ago how the second overall pick to the Commanders, this is where it gets fishy. I'm seeing a lot of mock drafts going with Jaden Daniels, but I'm seeing a lot of going with UNC with Drake May. And Drake May is great. You know, he's kind of this prototypical quarterback you see in every draft where he's a big guy with a strong arm. You look to Trey Lance a couple years ago, Josh Allen. You know, there's every year, at least most years, there's a quarterback that's like Drake May in the sense they got a big arm, they're very big, they can move like Trey Lance and Josh Allen, and it's hard to pass up on a quarterback like that because they're just so excellent to put in systems. They're so versatile, and you look at Drake May specifically, an excellent deep ball, one of the biggest arms in this draft. He's got sneaky athleticism, I think, you know, pair that with his big size, making him a threat on the ground. He's very good at the broken down plays, but on the other side of that, I think he is accurate under pressure, but he sometimes makes those wrong choices. I've been watching this film. I think sometimes, you know, he'll get nervous and then just kind of throw a ball, make a choice that he regrets, but he's still very accurate on those choices. So he's a great quarterback. Do I think that he deserves to go above Jaden Daniels? No, but I think that his ceiling, again, is just it's high, and he could be a Josh Allen type quarterback, best case scenario.
I do believe his ceiling is very high as well. I mean, he's got the same height as Jaden Daniels, obviously a little bit less on the weight side, 223. Jaden Daniels, I believe, sat at 244, which is obviously 20 pounds may not look like a big difference, but I mean, when you're coming to smoke somebody, it's gonna be a pretty big difference. And then, you know, I mean, his weaknesses, like you said, he throws some bad passes when he's under pressure, and that's something you don't really want out of a quarterback. But he does anticipate, like I said, Jaden Daniels does not. So I believe he should go higher than Jaden Daniels.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
A little surprising.
I was talking to Ryan Davis
earlier, and he said he thinks he's bad. He thinks Drake May is just downright bad.
Really?
He thinks he's going to be a bust.
Well,
I think there is a very, almost 100% chance one of these top three quarterbacks is going to be a bust.
I agree.
Just statistically.
I believe Drake May does have the highest percent to be the bust.
I agree.
But I also think the same with Caleb Williams. I think he might have the exact same chance to be a bust as Drake May. But the last quarterback we saw out of UNC was Sam Howell.
That's true.
Sam Howell was not great, but he wasn't bad. He kind of turned it up a little bit in his last part of the season with a lot of passing yards. Obviously, we know that. Not too many touchdowns, but he was getting the ball out and firing away. Obviously, I don't believe he's on the team anymore.
Yeah. One last thing I want to point out here. You know, you look at UNC as a team. They had a very bad offensive line, one of the worst in the country this past year. So I think that did kind of build him to be accurate under pressure. But on the other side of that, he's got almost PTSD of being sacked so much. And that's why I think he makes those bad decisions, is he doesn't want to get injured. But then again, it's nice to have a guy with his size. You know, he can take sacks.
If he gets paired with a good O-line, he could be a good quarterback. Or if he gets paired with the bad one, he could turn out like Andrew Luck. We don't know.
All right. Moving forward, we got about 2 minutes left here. In my opinion, the best prospect in this entire draft, better than Caleb Williams, with the wide receiver out of Ohio State, Marvin Harrison Jr., son of course, Hall of Fame receiver Marvin Harrison, one of the best Colts of all time. And you look at Marvin Harrison, 6'3", 209. He's tall. He's shifty. I compared him to a shifty A.J. Green. He's got similar measurables to AJ Green. He can make those spectacular catches like prime AJ Green could, but he's also very shifty. His route running is off the charts. It's hands down the best in the draft, probably the best we've seen in a long, long time. He can make acrobatic catches, as I just mentioned, top level athlete, long arms. You look at his kind of just notes. You look at his notes and overall his scouting report. The flaws are just, there's not many flaws. There's a few reasons not to draft this guy. I put his weaknesses. He struggles with those, you know, yards after catch. When he makes that catch, he doesn't necessarily struggle with it, but he doesn't have an elite ability to break tackles and get out into open space. But again, I wouldn't say that's like a negative. I think it's just not a positive. In a guy like Marvin Harrison, again, he doesn't really have negatives. He just has some things that aren't positives. I think he is 100% going to be a star. You look back to last year's draft, I think Bijan Robinson was the guy that was almost guaranteed to be a star player just because of his draft position, and he did. And I think for this year, I would put all my money that Marvin Harrison Jr. will be a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver.
I'd say I'd put my money on him too, to be a Pro Bowl caliber receiver. There's some like things I don't like. I don't like that he didn't compete in the combine or his pro day. That's a little, I don't know what you want to call it nowadays, sus. But I mean, I think it's a little sus.
It is.
Like, what are we hiding? Like, I don't know. I do agree. I'm super duper high on him, but there's some weaknesses you got to point out, and I think he's got a lot of them.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned that. You know, opting out of the combine and pro day, because there is definitely some question marks that come up. But I mean, he is the ideal size to speed ratio from a wide receiver. Last player we're going to talk about here. We're going to switch to the defense. As I mentioned, this is a very offensive heavy class, and it wouldn't surprise me if 9, maybe 8 of the first 10 players selected are on offense. I mean, heck, there's a world where all players in those top 10 picks are on offense just because it's that much heavier on the offensive end. One player I want to point out, Alabama edge rusher Dallas Turner, one of the better defenders in this class. He's looking that he's going to be going in the first round. Might drop a little bit. It wouldn't surprise me to the mid, maybe later first rounds, but he's 100% one of the best defenders in this draft. You look at him as a player, 6'3", 247, not necessarily big for a player at his position, especially that height, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you look at Aaron Donald, right? 5'10", right? 5'10"?
Yeah, I believe so.
5'10".
No, I think it might have been 6 foot.
Six foot, something like that, around that area. And he's arguably a top three best defender of all time. So, yeah, very good. Pro comp. You just wrote down Braden, Micah Parsons. I kind of agree.
That's something when I was watching this film, when we were doing that, obviously I forgot to fill it out on our sheet. That's on me. But no, I was thinking it was more like Micah Parsons when I watched him come off the edge. It looked spectacular.
Fast.
He looks super, super fast. Like I didn't even know what to think. I couldn't find a comparison. And then you pulled up the NFL website and you told me some weird probably Hall of Famer that I've never heard of. But
yeah.
I think he's compared to Micah Parsons with ease.
That's a good comparison, I think. Very speedy, very good hands, athletic. I think he could be very good, but there's a lot of other defensive players to mention here, a lot of players that could be that first defensive player taken. The guy out of Florida State, Jared Verse.
Verse,
he's an edge rusher. He's very good. Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Bama, both of those guys corners. I think the defensive side of this draft is a big question mark. I don't know exactly who is going to be the star out of this. I think I have a lot more opinions on the offensive side, but again, it's a very offensive heavy class. But with that being said, that is all the time we have. We hope you all enjoyed this little segment. The draft, when is it, Braden?
Couldn't tell you.
All right, let me look it up real quick.
I think it's in April or May. Oops.
All right, so it'll start April 25th, Thursday, and it'll go through Saturday, April 27th. So be sure to watch. Hopefully we informed you, entertained you a little bit. But you're listening to the Arabian Sports Network Behind the Playbook, 91.7 WEEM.
Want something new to listen to this week? Come hear Sam Duffer, Brooklyn Skyler, Talon Gillespie, Caitlin Callen, and Greasy Wolf on the newest episode of WEEM Weekly, Pendleton's personable, positive, and most popular podcast. You won't want to miss it, so go to 917WEEM.org or on YouTube as 917WEEM-WEEM Media or anywhere podcasts can be found.
Back to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 917WEEM.
So you just heard myself and Braden talk about all things NFL draft here on the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook. But we're your hosts, Ryan and Dawson. The NFL draft. Yeah. Of course, as I mentioned in the podcast several times, this year's class is pretty offensive heavy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited to see how it shakes up. I saw a thing on Instagram this morning. It was saying that the Giants are rumored to be trading up to a top three pick, whether that be the three or the two. I don't think they're going to go for the one. I think that's pretty out of their reach. Yeah. But two and three, maybe could happen. And it wouldn't surprise me if this year's top five is just complete chaos. Like we see a team trade up and then all the other teams just start throwing all the papers in the war room.
I've heard, when's the Vikings picking on, I think?
Five.
Yeah. I didn't think they were going to trade up, but I've seen some things that they're going
to
three.
No, it's not.
I was seeing things.
When is the Vikings pick? Hold on.
Okay. While you're doing that, Dawson, guy who you're doing it with, I have some things to say. Some of those takes, even from last week's podcast, what are we doing? Braden Folk, you got to lock in, bro.
It's the 11th. They have the 11th overall, but I agree. Braden's takes are horrible. All right.
Yeah.
Up next is our final segment here on this week's podcast is Aiden and Eli talking about the NBA playoffs. So that'll be up next on the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook, 91.7 WEEM.
Welcome back to another episode here on Inside the Playbook, here on the Arabian Sports Network, 91.7 WEEM. My name is Aiden Wilson, and I'm joined by Eli Libler here for this segment, and me and Eli will be talking about the NBA playoffs. Eli, what have you heard recently about the NBA and the playoffs, you know, since they're starting, I guess you could say they've started, or at least they're about to?
A lot of stuff that the apparently the Golden State Warriors have been falling off.
Yeah.
And that's shocking for me because I've always known them for like being like the top five players, at least teams make it to playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eli, if you want to start it off like that. Last time around for the Golden State Warriors, they did face the Sacramento Kings there for the eighth seed there in the NBA play-in, which is kind of newer through the past couple of years. The NBA play-in's basically the seeds 7 through 10 compete in a one-game series. You win or you go home, and then whoever wins gets to so there's two games. There's one game versus the 9th and the 10th seed, and then there's another game versus the 7th and the 8th. And the winner of the 7th and the 8th gets obviously that 7th seed, and then the winner of the 9 and 10 game gets to move on to the second play-in game where they face the loser of the 7 and the 8, the 8th seed game, and then the winner of that gets the 8th seed. So as I was saying, the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors, they did play for that eighth seed. Unfortunately for the Golden State Warriors, they did lose that game. That knocks them out of playoff contention. And Eli, like I said, they versus the Sacramento Kings. They're not a super good team. Obviously, they're not locked into the playoffs, at least not yet. That'll be decided later on tonight. As we're recording, it is April the 19th. So Eli, as I said, the Warriors, they lost to the Kings. How do you feel about that?
Shocking about how the Golden State's not making all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Not even making it there in the first place.
No, they're not even close, but definitely a shocker.
Yeah, so like I said, this is the first time we're seeing a healthy Warriors team, obviously led by Stephen Curry. They've made the playoffs, I think, for 11 straight years minus, I believe it was 2020. Because Stephen Curry got injured. I mean, the Warriors, you know, they're known for Stephen Curry and that three-point shooting. Really, they can just shoot the lights out anytime they want to. So, yeah, that's the first time they've been knocked out of the playoffs, making it only the second time in 11 years. But if we move forward, the winner of that 7 and 8th seed game, the Los Angeles Lakers versus the New Orleans Pelicans, the Lakers did come out on top in that one. And now they will move on to face the second-seeded Denver Nuggets, the NBA champions of last year. Yeah, they're in that first round. The Lakers and the Nuggets, they have a past. They faced last year in the playoffs, and obviously the Nuggets did beat them and knock them out of the playoffs. So, Eli, going into that matchup, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon for the Nuggets, they're all healthy. Jamal Murray, I think he was troubled up earlier in the season, but obviously now he's healthy, he's back, he's ready to play, especially in these playoffs. And more recently, LeBron James, he's been on a streak. You know, he's getting kind of old, close to retiring, and Anthony Davis is there as well for the Lakers. So both these teams, they're really dangerous going into the first round. It's definitely going to be an exciting matchup to see.
It's definitely going to be an interesting one versus, like, of having the old, like, OGs versus, like, one of the best players that's in the running.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of that, Nikola Jokic, as I said, he did win the MVP last year. He won the championship as well. So last year, he didn't win the MVP last year, but he won the year before that. So it's definitely been a strong and tough run for him more in these, more recent years. He's shown his dominance. He's shown that he belongs, and he shows that he can, you know, lead his team to a championship. So for the other matchup there in the first round, we have the We have the Oklahoma City Thunder versus the winner of the Pelicans and the Kings game. That game is later on tonight. The Kings versus the Pelicans. The Pelicans have won five times against the Kings here in the regular season. All wins coming by more than 10 points, Eli. So going into tonight's matchup, obviously, as I said, this were to already happen here on April 19th. But the Kings, they kind of have an advantage because Zion Williamson, in that first game versus the Lakers, he did get injured, so he's not going to be able to play in this game. He had a right hamstring strain last time he faced off against the Kings, though. He did have 31 points. So Zion being out in this one's really going to be a hard thing to adapt to, but it's also going to be a good thing to look forward to for the Kings.
Mm-hmm. That would definitely help them a lot because they're like the underdogs of this game, NBA tournament so far.
Yeah, Eli, as you were saying, the Kings, they are the ninth seed. They did beat the Warriors again in that first play-in game, but they also beat the Warriors last year multiple times, but they also had lost to the Warriors in the playoffs. So the Kings, they're kind of a mysterious team. They're not really, I don't think they've found themselves yet as a team, as a whole, as a culture. I don't think, you know, they have the dominance that can take them all the way, but they're definitely a solid and consistent playoff team. But if we look forward, we do have the Clippers and the Mavericks. That's going to be a crazy matchup.
That's probably going to be a close match because their records and their seeding.
Yeah, they're the fourth and the fifth seed, and the only difference between those two teams is one loss and one win. With players like James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, really – all the players that I just named there, if you think back to maybe 5-10 years ago, if you think back to that Warriors era, as you were speaking of earlier, that's really all the players that come to mind, especially during that time frame again, as I said. But for the Mavericks, they have PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford. They have the rookie, I forget his name right now, but they also have Luka Doncic. They have Kyrie Irving. It's two really stacked teams going off against each other in the first round of the playoffs. So it's going to be sad to see one of those teams drop, but it's also going to be very exciting to see the winner of that series move forward in these playoffs.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be one of the best probably to watch.
Yeah, I would say maybe definitely for the first round matchups, it's definitely going to be the best one to watch. But for the last first round series here in the Western Conference, we do have the Minnesota Timberwolves, the third seed, facing the sixth seed, the Phoenix Suns. Between those teams, the Timberwolves have seven more wins and six less losses than the Suns do. But the Phoenix Suns, they have Kevin Durant, they have Devin Booker, they have Yusuf Nurkic, they have Bradley Beal, they have all these superstar players, and then the Timberwolves, they're young. They definitely don't have the experience that the Suns do, but they have the energy and the work ethic and the hustle that's obviously taken them this far. Eli, for that matchup, what do you think?
From what I can tell, the Timberwolves have good odds for them, but you never know. Something might interesting happen during before even the match starts. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of up to how they respond to it.
Yeah. And again, these series in the first round were really just all the playoffs. It's the winner of seven-game series, so the first to win four obviously moves on to the next round. And as I was saying earlier, for the experience, the Suns have it. I'm not a professional when it comes to betting or anything, and I wouldn't say that it's really an easy one to bet on. But I think the Timberwolves and the Suns, it's going to be, I would say it's going to be a 7-game series, because the Timberwolves, they have Anthony Edwards, they have Rudy Gobert, they have Karl Anthony Towns, they have Jaden McDaniels, they have Naz Reid, and then the Suns, as I already listed, they have all those players. So it's definitely a lot of stardom between those two teams, and it's going to be interesting, again, to see who comes out, who can move forward. But it's going to be sad to see the team who loses, you know, get dropped from those playoffs. So, Eli, as we're done with the Western Conference, is there anything that you want to mention or note before we move on?
Nope.
Okay, but if we go to the East, we have the play-in rounds again. We have the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks. Between that game, the Bulls did win. Kobe White had 42 points. I think it was 41 points in that play-in matchup. And Eli, having 41 points, you know, that's a really high number. That's a lot of points. Would you be surprised if I told you that you know, all those points that he scored, they're not going to count toward his career high?
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so it was posted, I believe it was just a couple hours after the game happened, maybe the next morning, it said Kobe White's 41 points, you know, it's not going down as a record personally for him, because these play-in games don't count toward anything. They're kind of just your contention and your way to get into the playoffs. So unfortunately for Kobe White, you know, his points really won't count, but the win does for the team, and it'll help them hopefully advance, you know, further into these playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the next play-in matchup we do have is the 7-seed 76ers versus the 8-seed Miami Heat. Obviously for me, I'm a 76ers fan. Going into this game, I was kind of afraid, Eli. Jimmy Butler for the Heat last year during this playoff run, Jimmy Butler led his, again, 8-seed Miami Heat all the way to the finals. Jimmy Butler in that game, in the play-in game versus the 76ers, I believe he had 20, I want to say 20 points or 20 something around that, 22, 24. But, he also got injured in that game.
Huh.
Yeah, it was the second quarter. I believe he like fractured his, I forget, it's like a tendon in his leg or something, but, that put him down for the rest of the game. And then for the 76ers, Joel Embiid, he won the MVP last year. He came back kind of recently. He came back a week or so ago, and the 76ers, they've won 9 straight games now that he's came back to the roster. So the 76ers, they came out on top for that one. Now they will go up against the second seed New York Knicks there in the first round. And then later on today, we have the Chicago Bulls versus the Miami Heat, the play-in game for the Eastern Conference that will decide the 8th seed. But Eli, if you look, you know, at this bracket for the Eastern Conference, we have the first seed Celtics versus potentially the Bulls or the Heat. And then we have the 4th seed Cavaliers versus the 5th seed Magic, the 3rd seed Milwaukee Bucks versus the 6th seed hometown Indiana Pacers. And then again, the Knicks versus the 76ers. So Eli, with all those teams being named, what do you really think is going to stand out between the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference?
I feel like the one that's going to stand out the most is probably the Cleveland Magic's probably.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, because one, Cleveland is, of course, like a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the Magic's, who are also a good team.
Yeah, I would say between that series, the Cavaliers, they have the age, they have the star power. They have Donovan Mitchell. He's a shooting guard for them. He was in MVP running, I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago. So he's a player that can, you know, obviously play at that level, a high scoring player. I believe he had, I want to say 71 points earlier this season, or it might have been last season. So yeah, like I said, the Cavaliers and Donovan Mitchell, I would say if I were to bet on them, I would bet on the Cavaliers, because the Magic, they're good. They have the second-year forward, Paolo Banchero, which obviously has led them all the way to the 5th seed here in the Eastern Conference, but they're also young. They don't have many players that have been in the league or have really experienced the playoffs. So for this one, I'm pretty sure most people are going to say the Cavaliers, but it would be exciting, you know, to see the Magic beat an older, more experienced team and move on deeper into these playoffs to kind of build their team and their culture more as well. But Eli, is there another series that maybe you are looking at?
The Bucks and the Pacers.
Yeah.
We obviously, because Pacers are is our hometown, which is going to stand out the most.
Right.
But they're also like the closest second being underdog if the 76ers weren't the seventh seed.
Yeah, I would say the Pacers versus the Bucks. For that game, the Bucks, they've kind of been on a downward spiral this year. Last year, I believe they were the first seed, and Giannis Antetokounmpo had gotten injured before the first round series last year, which eventually they lost to the Jimmy Butler-led Miami Heat. But this time around, Giannis is injured again, just right before the playoffs are, you know, going into play. They have Damian Lillard, they have Chris Middleton, they have Bobby Portis, Brooke Lopez, and all those really solid players that have been on Milwaukee for the longest time. But as I was saying, with Giannis being injured, that kind of prevented them from moving on or even being successful at all last year. So I guess you could say potentially, you know, it's going to be the same thing, but just obviously in a different year. But for the Pacers, they've been electric this year. They're young, I would say, at least, you know, average age. They're not an old team. They're not a young team. They're right in the middle. They have players like Tyrese Halliburton. He led the league in assists earlier this year, and I believe he's on the MVP. He's on the ladder for the MVP race. He's one of the top voters or contenders, whatever you want to say for that award. But aside from him, they have Pascal Siakam, they have Obi Toppin, they have Benedict Mathurin, they have Miles Turner. They're really solid at those forward and center positions, and they also have depth as well. So with Giannis being injured, and really all the energy that that backcourt, the Pacers, have, I think it can create a good gap for them. And they could potentially, you know, win a game or two, and then that'll put them into a space where it's probably more likely that they're going to win that series than lose. So that's all for that series. And then for the Knicks versus the 76ers, Eli, I want to hear your opinion on this one because as a 76ers fan, obviously I'm going to be biased. Obviously I want them to win. So let's just see what you have to say first.
Well, honestly, kind of want to say the 76ers to win because, one, they're the underdog of the whole tournament. Yeah. And two, they have to pick up their intensity so they can push out the competition.
Yeah, and there's kind of a storyline between these teams and kind of for the 76ers in general. Maybe I know more so about this one than the other teams just because, again, it's my team. It's my favorite team. I'm going to know more. But for the play-in game, the 76ers, as I said, they face the Miami Heat, which Jimmy Butler leads that team. And he was on the 76ers a couple years ago in 2019. I believe we actually went to the Eastern Conference Finals with that team. And then this year we beat Jimmy Butler, you know, an old player for our team. And then up next for the New York Knicks, they have a couple of players on that team, Jalen Brunson, Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart. And those players, they played for Villanova in college, which Villanova is a school located, I guess you could say, in Pennsylvania or in that area. So for the 76ers and the New York Knicks, there's kind of a battle of like, you know, are these players, did they really go to college from here, like from Philadelphia, or are they just, you know, they play for the Knicks now? Do we really like them or do we not? Because Villanova, that team had won a national championship in college. So there's a lot of attention around that. But for the outcome of that series, I would like to say the 76ers would win, you know. They have Tyrese Maxey at their point guard. He's been electric. He had his first All-Star selection this year. And then for the New York Knicks, they have Jalen Brunson. I believe he's top 10, maybe top 5 in scoring in the whole league. They have OG Anunoby. They have a lot of weapons offensively, but defensively they don't have that much. As well as Julius Randle being injured here for this series. And as I was mentioning earlier, for the 76ers, Joel Embiid, he's back and healthy. So we'll really see what he can do. But I think that's all the time we have here, Eli. Is there anything else you'd like to mention before we sign off?
No.
All right. Well, you guys heard it here first. Here's me and Eli's takes on the 2024 NBA playoffs here on Inside the Playbook on the Arabian Sports Network, 91.7 WEEM.
Bring our music and Arabian sports everywhere you go by downloading our app on your phone. It's called 91.7 WEEM. Whether you are on a run, in your car, or at work, listen to us live. Go to the App Store today and download our app on your Android or iPhone for free. Listen today here on 91.7 WEEM.
Back to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
Welcome back to the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook. But that is all the time we have for this week's episode. I'm Dawson Perrell.
And I'm Ryan Davis. But be sure to subscribe and turn on notifications to catch the next episode in a couple of weeks. Hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook.
Thank you for tuning in to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.